That was Ali Stroker performing the song I Can't Say No as the character Ado Annie, which she plays in the Broadway revival of Oklahoma. Stroker made history Sunday when she became the first wheelchair user to win a Tony Award. She dedicated her award to every kid who faces limitations and challenges. It was a big moment, but there's still a long way to go in terms of how we treat disabled people in the United States today. Join the conversation. Tell us what Ali Stroker's win said for you. What does it say about visibility for disabled people in the United States? Did her win mean something personal to you or to someone in your family? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And with us to talk about this from Davidson, North Carolina, is Anne Fox. She's a professor of English at Davidson College, where she specializes in 20th and 21st century dramatic literature and disability studies. She's also co-curated 4 disability-related visual arts exhibitions. Anne Fox, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha.
Thanks for joining us. Could you, I assume you watched this or you've seen videos of the award acceptance and the speech afterwards?
I have indeed.
What did you think as you watched it?
Well, you know, I thought it was a really wonderful moment for disability visibility, both in the U.S. and on stage. So often we think that disability and accomplishment are mutually exclusive, and to have an actress like Ali Stroker up there representing the disability community and accepting a major theatrical award was, I think, a really historical moment.
And when you talk about disability visibility, is that two-part? Is it that we don't see enough people with some kind of disability mainstreamed in a way in society? And is it also that when we do, they're marginalized in some way?
I think it's both, and I think it's something else as well. I think part of it is, in some ways, disability is everywhere, but it's so overdetermined that we accept certain tropes as the truth about disability without thinking beyond those tropes.
When you say overdetermined, what do you mean? When you say overdetermined.
For example, like on your website, you had the example of Cody Lee on America's Got Talent. And I think for me, in my field, watching that clip, while I found his story very personally meaningful, the inspirational overcomer, the blind pianist, the autistic savant are all typical patterns into which we've slotted disabled people, particularly people with talent or accomplishment that we kind of hold up as spectacle. In the meantime, we don't ask questions about, say, employment or daily life or, you know, the experiences of disabled people when they're not in those sort of predetermined patterns.
So since you mentioned Cody Lee, again, as you said, Cody is, he's blind, he has autism, he's a pianist and singer, and he went on America's Got Talent as a contestant. And when he auditioned, he was accompanied by his mom, Tina. We have a clip of her talking a bit about him before his performance.
Cody is blind and autistic.
Oh. Wow.
We found out that he loved music really early on. He listened and his eyes just went huge. And he started singing. And that's when I was in tears, because that's when I realized, oh my gosh, he's an entertainer. So yeah. Through music and performing, he was able to withstand living in this world. Because when you're autistic, it's really hard to do what everybody else does. It actually has saved his life playing music.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Anne Fox, we actually have a little bit of that audition that Cody did for America's Got Talent. This was in May. It's been viewed more than 30 million times since then. And here's a portion.
I've been to so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs and I made some bad rhymes.
Now, what we don't have, which I wish we could play, is when Cody's mom was speaking. He would weigh in once in a while, but he weighed in a way that was sort of traditionally autistic. He isn't that comfortable speaking. He was a little quirky. So the disparity between his sort of public presentation and conversation and performance was dramatically different. But I want to make sure I heard correctly something you said. Did you make a distinction between how Cody was presented to the public and how Ali was? Because we see Ali in a professional capacity and Cody, we're not sure about the rest of his life?
I think so, and I think it's interesting that Cody is spoken for. I think it's interesting. I was watching that clip on YouTube this morning from America's Got Talent, and it's 8 minutes long, and I would say I think between 2 and 3 minutes is actually his performance, and the rest is a lot of attention on the non-disabled people and their response to him, and they're very moved, and they're tearing up. And I think I'm not trying to say that those emotions are not authentic, and I'm not trying to say that playing music might not be meaningful for Cody. At the same time, I think the work that the representation of a show like America's Got Talent does is very problematic. It fits into this something we in the field call inspiration porn. Something like Ali's performance in Oklahoma brings forward, it plays, first of all, with the genre of musical theater. I have a colleague named Sam Yates who's written about the notion that in musical theater, very often we talk about the triple threat performer who has to dance, sing, and act. Ali's presence disrupts that, right? She is virtuosic in her wheelchair. Her presence in the wheelchair as one of the bodies on stage from many different kinds of identity also brings forward the way in which Oklahoma and that production can challenge power relationships. So I think what Cody's representation does is fit into very traditional ways that disability is defined in popular culture for non-disabled people's kind of feel-good sentimentality versus Ali's performance really interrogating who we've seen on stage and what we expect from them in terms of disability and how disability can bring new meaning to work.
What did you wish America's Got Talent did differently, or what do you think it could have done differently to present Cody in a way you would have preferred?
Well, I think, you know, it's a big question because I think that's taking on the whole apparatus of how pop culture uses disability. I mean, these kind of depictions of disability as inspirational are on college websites and the evening news. I mean, you know, NBC News did a story about Ali last night. And there's nothing wrong with inspiration, but the problem is when we limit the depiction of disabled people only to inspiration and sentimentality. And so rather than, you know, kind of micromanage how they might have presented Cody, I would simply say, you know, why not present Cody in his own way? Why does his mom have to speak for him? What other kinds of representations of disability might we have? Could we have disability arts in a program like America's Got Talent? There's a really vibrant and rich community of disability and art and culture in this country that doesn't really get much attention within kind of commercial and pop culture venues.
Callers, we are talking about Ali Stroker winning a Tony Award. She performed on Broadway in a wheelchair, very historic win. We're also talking about a autistic, blind young man who didn't audition on America's Got Talent. It's really shown people with disabilities in the arts in a way that has been unusual. Let us know what you think about all this. 1-800-423-8255. Is that inspiration porn, as Anne Fox called it, or are you inspired? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go to a caller from Buffalo, New York. This is Amy. Amy, thank you for calling. Welcome to On Point. And what do you think as you hear all this?
Hi. I think it's an excellent step forward. I agree with your guest that there's a long way to go in the depiction of people with disabilities in the arts. But I actually manage a program for adults with developmental disabilities that is all performing and visual arts-based. And I'll tell you, there's some incredible talent amongst the people that we support. I know that they're excited to witness Ali's win. We actually studied a production that she was in some time back of Spring Awakening that utilized a lot of sign language and actually a wide range of actors with different abilities and disabilities. So I think it's fantastic. I think she's a wonderfully talented actress in her own right, and I think that's important that she has a degree in this. It's not just some gimmick. It's something that she's worked hard at, and she really does have the talent outside of, you know, not in spite of her disability, but that she's just a talented actress in her own right, regardless of whether she's in a wheelchair or not. So I think
Amy, thank you for that. And your line is a little rough, so we apologize to listeners who couldn't hear that very clearly. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Michael, welcome to On Point. What are your thoughts?
Hi, yes. I've been a disability rights advocate for over 40 years, and I use a wheelchair for mobility. And what I see in the entertainment industry is we've made great strides with people of color, women, and some other groups who are demanding and getting more attention in the entertainment industry, and we need to apply those very same principles to the disability community. I think what's noteworthy about Ali is that the role that she was in on Broadway was not a person with a disability per se. She just happened to be a person with disability who was selected for that role, which would otherwise have been filled by a non-disabled person. Conversely, what we see often in movies and other entertainment is disabled roles. I saw a performance of Porgy and Bess recently, where, you know, Porgy is a disabled character, but he's very often played by non-disabled actors, and that needs to change.
Well, actually, in fact, Emily Blunt, big-name actress, either has been cast as or is in contention for playing the role of a blind and deaf woman. That's been somewhat controversial because some people have said, why not find a deaf and or blind actor to play that role? But are you arguing that, number one, yes, please give people with disabilities those roles, but don't just pigeonhole them into the roles that involve disabled people?
Exactly. We people with disabilities in the entertainment field need to be given roles as disabled characters and roles as just characters who happen to have disabilities, and it doesn't even need to be commented on. It's just part of the landscape.
And actually, let's take one more caller before we go back to Ann Fox. This is Hilda calling from Frederick, Maryland. Hilda, welcome to On Point, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I happen to be blind. I went to the Maryland School for the Blind, which is one of the best. I also was in the drama club. I got a certificate for playing a married woman when I was, 17? But I don't understand. I grew up in a large family, and being a rural family, we had many, many people there all the time working with each other's fields. I worked in the garden and the fields just like everybody else does. I don't think people understand that you don't need your sight to do a multitude of things.
And how do you think we change people's incorrect perception of that?
Well, I now even live in a senior citizen home. I've been here, apartment project. I've been here for going on 18 years. And now people realize that I'm just like they are. I mean, yeah, they'll whistle when I get near a step or something like that. But I just think they're human beings. We breathe, we drink, we eat, we lie down and sleep. I exercise every day. I graduate to Maryland School for the Blind and Baltimore Eastern High School and Hagerstown Business College. And I think that's what the average person does. I think everybody does things. Your eyes and sit in the kitchen and see if you cannot find knives and forks and spoons. And you'll find out that you can.
Hilda, thank you for that. Thank you for calling. Ann Fox, I want to play a piece of Ali Stroker's acceptance speech. Again, she won a Tony on Sunday when she became the first wheelchair user to win that award. And here's part of what she said.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This award is for every kid who is watching tonight who has a disability, who has a limitation or a challenge, who has been waiting to see themselves represented in this arena. You are.
Ann Fox, there's a whole community of artists that are trying to show that a wheelchair can be a source of creativity. Do you feel like that message is getting across?
I hope so. I mean, I think the presence of somebody like Ali certainly is a help in getting across the idea that wheelchairs are about movement and energy. So often we use this language of wheelchair bound, you know, as though someone is trapped. And it's simply a mode of movement that is another way of expression. I mean, there are dance companies like Axis and Kinetic Light that have explored the way in which the wheelchair can be a form of aesthetics. And I think that really matters. I also want to say that, you know, in terms of her speech, I think it's interesting she talks about the importance of visibility, but what I don't know if this got reported as much is backstage she also talked about access. And so I think in addition to being aware of disability arts and the wheelchair as a form of aesthetic, we also need to be aware of the barriers to people with all kinds of disabilities to artistic training and participation. You know, she commented on the fact that, you know, very often theaters are accessible for wheelchair users in the audience, but not for people backstage. She was in the wings waiting to come out to get her Tony. They didn't build a ramp on that stage. They didn't design that stage in a way that was accessible for her. And so I think the idea of accessibility in training, in attitude, is just as important as people becoming familiarized with the rich and juicy work that's being done from within disability arts and culture.
Another thing she has said in an interview, which I really liked, was she said, I find it to be fascinating that often people think, they don't think I can dance. Who says that dance isn't turning on wheels? Who says dancing isn't throwing your arms up in the air and grabbing someone else's arms to be propelled across the stage? And it is true. I think we have a bit of a limited definition in our minds, typically, of what does dance mean? And she showed it can be other things than we might think.
Absolutely, and disabled artists and people from within disability culture have been exploring this for a really long time, both for and within the community. And I think, in a way, this is what has drawn me to sort of disability arts, because it just expands our notion of bodily variability and what's possible. There's a beauty in it. And so I think that's tremendously exciting. And she, I mean, I've seen this production. She uses that dance as a way to express desire, to be sexy, to be joyful, to be exuberant, all things that in, you know, sort of our stereotyped, stigmatized views of disability, we see as sort of not part of disability identity, when they very much are.
Right. Well, just like in the Cody Lee performance, that song is a lot about desire and the longing to be desired, something that many people might not associate with someone in a wheelchair.
Which I think is a good point, and something that people don't necessarily associate with disability identity. I mean, I think one of your callers said something really important, that we have a long way to go in terms of thinking about disability as a multicultural identity. So often we think of it as medicalized or charity or pity. And what would it mean if we saw disability as an identity, as a source of creativity, as a source of as a sort of community with its own agency, history, and activist movement? I mean, I have found that personally transformative, and I think it is transformative for our larger culture.
That's Anne Fox. She's a professor of English at Davidson College. She specializes in 20th and 21st century dramatic literature, as well as disability studies. Anne Fox, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Sasha.
And listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poley, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller. With help from Alice Reese and Sydney Wertheim, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is On Point.